for farmers, there is still heavy concern for many other industries here.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Benji. Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 3 minutes past five. So it is. Hope you've had a good Wednesday. As usual, thanks for spending some of your day with me. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. What a show I've got for you today. I'll tell you more about that in a couple of seconds' time. You can tweet me as usual. The Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show. There you are.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
About 2 months before Christmas, during one of the live phone-in shows, a gentleman phoned in from Oldham and suggested that I get in touch with my guest today, Raja Mia MBE. Raja has nearly three decades of experience working with vulnerable people. He's worked for the government in intervent-type programs. He's worked for Oldham Council. He's been involved in the running of schools. And these days, he's in the process of writing a blog that is nothing short of astonishing because of the claims it makes about Oldham Council in Greater Manchester. It is run by gangsters and their associates, writes Raja. Gangsters that belong to criminal gangs that have been proven to be responsible for the cold-blooded murder of police officers. Oldham Council is no longer in the control of law-abiding officials. It has been infiltrated by the criminal cartels. And Raja believes that he's got unimpeachable evidence that grooming is going on in Oldham and that very senior officials there are turning a blind eye to it. You don't want to miss him. He joins me in about 25 minutes' time. This is Wednesday's programme. I am Richie Allen. Thanks for joining. I know I said that already. Yes, I do repeat myself. Must be the Alzheimer's. Yeah, don't be offended. Alzheimer's is not nice. I know that. I'm well aware of it. Right, so there you go. Let's run through the news. And I'll have an extended conversation with Raja. He's going to be on with me from about 5:30 till the end of the programme, because there's a lot to get through. The blog that he's written, I will of course be putting links to it, of course, on Twitter, and I'll get Raj to put links to it on Facebook as well, because it's immense, it's absolutely brilliantly written, this series of chapters about what he believes to be endemic corruption in Oldham, in politics in Oldham, in the heart of the Labour Party, in the council there. And how that has led, that marriage between the council and criminal elements has led to grooming gangs operating in plain sight in Oldham. You don't want to miss that. I'm not trying to oversell it because you couldn't. And that's, of course, following on from yesterday's report published here in Manchester that said police officers knew that grooming was going on. They had the evidence that proved, again, that it was endemic and did nothing about it. And of course, Maggie Oliver has been on this programme many times before. 7 minutes past the hour. Let's have a look through one of the more quirkier stories. Here's a story. About 4 years ago, a very good friend of mine called Martin Noakes, who's a singer-songwriter of great talent, it must be said, Martin. I met Martin at TPV in London. He sent me some literature that schools in London were sending to parents that was annoying parents. And the literature was saying things along the lines of that when that parents must be at the school at a certain time in order for the school to release the children back to the parents. It went further than that anyway. A kind of a proprietal, there you are, put my teeth in, kind of a proprietal attitude the school had towards children. Here's a story in the Daily Mail today. Well, it's online anyway. Parents are fuming as a school threatens to charge them £1 for every 5 minutes they are late. Late meaning late to pick up their children. And here's the kicker. the same school has threatened to ring social services if the parents haven't collected their children by 4 p.m. This is the Holy Trinity Church of England Primary in Gravesend in Kent. New rules this week. The policy change targets those who pick up their children, even if they're only 10 minutes late. The head teacher is getting dog's abuse from the parents there. The letter sent out says that if kids aren't picked up by 4 p.m, the school will ring social services. Wow. Parents are saying this is meant to be a Christian school. You know, things happen. Life is rotten. Mum and dad are working, driving across town. When all of these schools are releasing the children at the same time, sometimes means we're going to be late. The head teacher, a woman called Denise Gibbs Nagwar, Denise Gibbs Nagwar, she says the late collection of pupils policy was introduced in a bid to ensure our children are collected from school on time. It's for the child's benefit. She goes on to allege that it could be very psychologically harming for a child if they are picked up late. Anxiety and distress, hence maybe the need to call social services. I thought that was a story worth picking up on. Maybe we will pick up on it later on this week, although we're already Wednesday, aren't we? Imagine that. If you're late to pick up your kid, we'll charge you money for every 5 minutes you're late. If you're really late, we'll call social services. Yeah. Welcome to dystopia. 5:09. Your Richie Allen radio show. Let's move on from that. Imagine that. Imagine what you do if you got that letter. To the United States of America then, U.S. House of Representative Speaker, or House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi has named the lawmakers who will prosecute the impeachment case against Donald Trump. There was a news conference earlier on. She appeared with seven managers, led by Adam Schiff, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. They'll vote later, the House will, to send the impeachment charges against Trump to the Senate. She's very confident, is Nancy Pelosi, says Cordelia Lynch. Cordelia Lynch is Sky News woman in D.C. She says, although Nancy Pelosi is confident, she shouldn't be because the Senate is unlikely to do for Donald Trump. Cordelia Lynch.
She said, in fact, that she was confident that Donald Trump will be removed from office. And that is the question that senators will have to decide on. But this is a Senate controlled by Republicans, and there is no evidence yet that they will reach anything near the two-thirds majority they would need to vote to remove Donald Trump from office. But look, this is the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, laying out her case. She has to maintain to the American public and to her party that she is confident about what they know and to explain what it is that Donald Trump has done wrong. It's interesting that choice of House managers who will prosecute this trial in the Senate. Clearly choosing people that she believes will soberly treat this as a courtroom and that know how to go after the president and to make their case to the American public. There's been a delay about these articles of impeachment being handed over and lots of dispute about what this trial may or may not look like. Democrats want to see witnesses called, Republicans don't. The Speaker of the House said that she thinks time has been their friend because it's yielded incriminating evidence, including some of that being released overnight. Some of that evidence suggests, alleges that Donald Trump's associates, his personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani and people he knew were involved in the surveillance of the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. She was someone that testified during the House impeachment process. It was also interesting to hear from Jerry Nadler. He's head of the Judiciary Committee, and he really wanted to make clear what it is that he and Democrats believe Donald Trump has done wrong. He said that there is overwhelming evidence the president tried to extort a foreign government.
Overwhelming evidence. Well, maybe there is, maybe there isn't. It's unlikely to amount to anything other than a hill of beans. It's all theatre, it's all theatre. Those who really control both sides of the political game, the financiers whose names you've never heard of and whose names never appear on the Fortune 500 list. They rub their hands together in glee, laughing at us as we go and vote for these people and get all enamoured, get all excited and swear our allegiances to our candidates when they couldn't care less who is in. And that is true. It's all theatre. Let's leave Trump alone for now. The BBG, not the BBC, 13 minutes past the hour. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for tweeting me. I had a laugh this morning. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, was on BBC Radio 5 with the king of the virtue swingers. Not signalers, virtue swingers, Nicky Campbell. Campbell wanted to ask Matt Hancock about flying less to save the planet. And this maybe won't amuse you, but it amused me.
Matt Hancock, we face a climate catastrophe. Should we be flying less?
Nope.
No. I just love that.
I think that connectivity around the country is incredibly important. Take the flights to the Scilly Isles, for instance. It's very hard and takes a long time to get to the Scilly Isles if you're not in an aeroplane. And being able to connect different parts of the country is important. At the same time, flying has already decarbonised and can decarbonise more. And so I think that I agree entirely with what the gentleman you just played said.
Would you fly from London to Aberdeen?
I have flown from London to Aberdeen.
Would you do it again?
Of course. Yes, of course, if that's necessary. Yeah.
What do you mean necessary?
What do you mean necessary? Would you fly from London to Aberdeen? Yes, I have. I've done it before, and I would again if necessary. What do you mean necessary? Here comes the obvious answer.
Well, if I needed to get to Aberdeen and...
Yes, if I needed to get to Aberdeen and a flight was available, I might just hop on one.
And I didn't have the time to take the train.
Shouldn't we make those sacrifices because what is happening to our planet?
No, we should use technology.
Behoves us to do so.
We should use...
Behoves us to do so. Ah, Nicky Campbell. I'm not far away from Nicky Campbell. Salford Quays, Media City, is but a very short walk from me. I hope I bump into him someday.
We should use technology to reduce carbon emissions. For instance, electric.
Yeah, nonsense. Why? Why would you like to bump into him? Just to take the piss out of him. That's all. To take the royal piss out of him. Nicky Campbell, eh? Doesn't it behove us to do so because of the planet? No, it doesn't. If I need to be in Aberdeen, I'm getting on a plane. Shut your cake hole. Do we need Big Ben to ring out triumphantly on January 31st at 11 o'clock p.m.? Do we? As we allegedly leave the European Union? Well, Tory MP Marc Francoise, or Francois, thinks so. Here he is with Sky's Colin Brazier. Brazier says, is it worth the cost of ringing Big Ben in 16 days' time, is it?
Yes, it is, because under Article 50, by law, we leave the European Union at precisely 11 p.m.
Bullshit.
Greenwich Mean Time on the 31st. However you voted in the referendum, this is undeniably a historic moment in our history. Those who wish to celebrate it, and it's entirely voluntary, because we leave at a specific time, will need to look to a clock, just as you do on New Year's Eve. And it seems inconceivable to me and many of my colleagues that that clock should be any other than the most iconic timepiece in the world, which is Big Ben.
The most iconic timepiece in the world, Big Ben. Give me a break.
Big Ben, which currently doesn't have a clapper, and the floor, and the floor which holds...
The floor's not there.
..holds it aloft, has been... The temporary flooring that was there, which was strengthened, has gone.
So a load of pikeys stole the floor, apparently.
But there is a bill attached to this. That's the problem.
Personally, I think that estimate of £500,000 is probably a bit inflated, perhaps by people that never wanted to do it in the first place. But nevertheless, for argument's sake, let's say it's £500,000. The Prime Minister has suggested it might be possible to raise that money by crowdfunding. Well, I have half an announcement.
Oh.
I've been having meetings this morning with various people. We will launch a national crowdfunding campaign.
Oh, here we go.
Probably tomorrow, that Big Ben will bong for Brexit. And then people who wish to donate to that, it's entirely voluntary, can do so.
If you donate to that, I'm coming around to your house. I'm coming to find you. And by the way, Pikey, I'm a Pikey. So don't, you should say traveller, Richie. And then, of course, you shouldn't say traveller at all. What a gross stereotype that is to suggest that members of the travelling community steal things. Not all of it. Some do. Some do. We do. Oh, God. Talking myself into trouble here. 18 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. We've got a very important conversation coming up with Raja Mia, who is in Manchester. MBE, I should say. And you don't want to miss it. I really mean you do not want to miss that. He joins me shortly. Leila Moran is a Lib Dem, a member of the lesser spotted Lib Dems. The Lib Dems, that's the Liberal Democrats, are so short in numbers now, they keep bumping into David Attenborough. I know. Is that the best you've got? That is the best I've got. They're so short in numbers now, they keep bumping into David Attenborough. Can't say Craig Bellamy anymore. Leila Moran recently said she was pansexual and having a relationship with a woman. Pansexual, she said. I'm pansexual.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Having a clue. Having a clue. She was on the BBC Politics show today, the panel, and they wanted to know what the feck pansexual means. I thought it meant having sex on every one of the five continents, or the six continents, which makes me a pansexual. Oh yeah, baby, big time, big time. Pam and her five sisters on five continents. Anyway, here's the clip, Leila Moran. What does pansexual mean?
Forgive me for asking, but what exactly, I mean, you're the first openly pansexual, I think, MP. What is it exactly, and how does it differ from
being
bisexual?
Well, this is the thing. So when I found myself in this lovely relationship, I didn't really think about what label am I going to give myself. I suppose the classic, when I first had the conversation with my mum, I did say bi, because it was...
I did say bi to my mum, because if you fancy men and women, that would make you bisexual, correct?
It was the way that I understood it. But then when I was looking at, well, actually, what are the labels that exist out there?
She went looking for a label. She went trawling for a label that she could adopt.
Pansexual resonated with me more, because in essence, it's about the person. So it's a new name, but for a very old idea. It's, you know, you connect with the person, you connect with their personality, and less about their physical attributes, whether it be gender or race or whatever it might be. So you sort of remove all of that from the equation, and it's about that connection. So that's what, to me, pansexual
means.
Well,
it sounds more glamorous than bisexual, I think.
Yeah.
That's Michael Gove's wife, the Duchy of Lancaster. Michael Gove, that's his wife chiming in. Sarah Vine is her name.
Is that, more interesting. Is that your
form? It sounds more exotic than bisexual. Well, it does, of course.
More mysterious. It's more mysterious.
It's more mysterious. There's more potential. I don't know. Unspoken potential.
Yeah, it is it's a fairly new term.
Bisexual is just two things.
Well, there is
whereas
that.
Pan is as many
it's,
as you
know,
want.
As many as you, and, I think,
and on that open, generous.
Oh, Jesus. God be with the days. And I mean God be with the days when Bernard Manning was on those types of panels. You know, God be with the days. I'm pansexual. You're not, love. You're bisexual or you're a lesbian. It's about the size of it. 21 minutes past the hour. Thanks for your tweets. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You know that. And you can correspond with people by going to where it says search Twitter. If you put Richie Allen Show in to search Twitter with no spaces, you'll be able to chat with other people, argue with them, agree with them, threaten to kill them. Well, whatever you want to do, don't threaten to kill them. We're pacifists here. After all, we are socialists, are we not? Well, I don't know about you, but I am. I am, I tells you. Hi to Charlotte and Burnley. Hi to David, cartoon drunk, who said a very unkind thing over the Christmas on Twitter, which was brought to my attention by Rog. You're on the naughty step, David. David, cartoon drunk there. Very naughty thing he said about the BBG. I miss nothing. I've got my minions trawling social media for any criticism of me. My skin is so thin, you can see my heart. I don't have a heart. Hi to Mark Best. Hi to Dean Smith, who says, that's trans pan, Richie. Very good, Dean. Very good. Let's move on again before we get ourselves into trouble here. We're having a bit of a giggle here because we're going to talk very serious things in a minute with Raja. And I want you all ears. And I know you'll have questions. We'll have plenty of time to put questions to him. I do recommend that at some stage, if not now, because you're going to be hearing from him in a minute, that you do check out his blog. The website is recusant-9.com. Recusant, that's recusant-9.com. Recusant-9.com. It is very well written. It's written by a man who knows how to write. All right? All right. On that subject, Maggie Oliver, former detective, Greater Manchester Police, has been on this programme with me. Great lady, whistleblower. Her book is very important. I suggest you read it. Following on from the report yesterday, which talked about the horrendous failures by the police in Manchester to deal with the grooming of children and the death of one girl in particular. Right? Maggie went on to talk radio today to speak with Julia Hartley Brewer. Very important this. Maggie says, it's still happening now, to cover up, she says. It's still happening now. Listen carefully to what she says.
Yesterday was a monumental day for me personally. It was a vindication of everything I have been saying. But I'm like a broken record. I keep saying the same thing. And I hear the same apologies trotted out.
And we saw yesterday, didn't we? We said the Chief of Metro Police, how appalled he was. He wasn't there at the time. We had the Andy Burnham, the Greater Manchester Mayor. And this happens every time there's a new report. We're horrified. We're so sorry it won't happen again. Yeah.
And actually what they say then is, this was 15 years ago. Things have changed. Well, I'm telling you, they have not. I have now set up my own foundation because I am inundated on a daily basis with stories and desperate letters and messages from people who are suffering right now.
Right now. It hasn't changed. And she made those points when she was on with me for an extended conversation. Hartley Brewer gave her plenty of time to her credit, but they don't have the luxury on national radio that we have here. We can spend as much time on a subject as we want. 25 minutes past the hour. Hi to William in Scotland. Hi to Faisal. Hi to Mrs. S. Hi to everybody who's tuning in. Everybody. Thanks for... I know I've said this four times today. I don't know, I feel very gracious. I feel a lot of gratitude today. I don't know what it is. Do you know what it is? Well, I tell you what it is. I've had a nightmare looking after this pup, this 10-week-old pup. It's been horrendous today. And crawling through the doors of the studio at 4:30 today, I was just delighted. I was thrilled. I've never been so happy to be sitting here with you right now. And the future Mrs. Allen can take over monitoring this whirlwind of terrorism that is this golden retriever 10-week-old pup. This absolute psychopath with black eyes. I'm going to sound like Robert Shaw now from Jaws with black eyes. She has black eyes. You should see the way she looks at you. Black eyes. Even Jazz, my 12-year-old German Shepherd, has just given up. All right, we're going to get serious now because we're going to join Raja Mia in Manchester. Before we do that, though, I'm going to take a very short break, then a tune. All right, we'll take a very quick break, then a tune. Back in about 60 seconds.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, when I come back, I will be joined by Raja Mia, MBE, on Wednesday's Richie Allen radio show. The time approaching 27 minutes past the hour. Do not go anywhere. And you can tweet questions and comments to the usual Twitter handle. This is music from the great, late, great even Prince. This is 1999. Welcome to the Richie Allen Radio Show. It belongs to you. It is 5:30 on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester, broadcasting on Fab Radio, 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, multiple platforms around the world. Thanks for your interest in this. I would know nothing about this if it wasn't for a caller to the programme last year. To my shame, really. It's difficult. You know, when you're a one-man operation. But I have to say from the outset, and you can criticise me in the future if I ever say this again, I've never read anything like the Welcome to Oldham series that's on the website recusant-9.com. I've never read anything like it. Amazingly enough, I'm reading a book at the moment by Frank Sheeran, and that's the book that was used as the basis for Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. And reading the Welcome to Oldham series on recusant-9.com, it's staggering to me, the similarities. Raja Mia is an MBE, mentioned at the top of the programme, very well-respected man, education, worked for Oldham Council, outreach programmes, prevention programmes, again, getting an MBE for his services. Grew up in Oldham, his parents took him to Oldham. He tells a funny story early on in the blog about them not going to Manchester or to Liverpool or Leeds, but going to Oldham, which is in the east of Greater Manchester. And I'm going to read you just a couple of quotes. He talks about, in the blog, about grooming gangs operating in Oldham, but it's part of a much wider story about corruption in Oldham in general. He says, and he says this, I think, in part 7 of the Welcome to Oldham series, and it is incredibly well written. Whatever you might think about it, whether you're amazed by it, whether you think, wow, that can't be happening, whether you think it is happening, whether you agree or disagree, it's brilliantly written, and he has packed it with examples, I should say evidence, not examples, with evidence of emails, the screen grabs of conversations to support the claims that he makes. He writes in part 7, our town is not run by the politicians we elected, it's run by the gangsters and their associates. Gangsters that belong to criminal gangs that have been proven even to be responsible for the cold-blooded murder of police officers. These gangsters and their associates now believe that they have free rein. Oldham Council is no longer in the control of law-abiding officials. It has been infiltrated by the criminal cartels. And he goes on to call for the government to intervene and take over administration of Oldham. He says the Asian Mafia now openly rules Oldham. And one of the things I was particularly struck by in the first part of the series, he said that he had different advice from different friends. Because there is an increase in far-right activity, we know that, thugs like Tommy Robinson and his ilk, and they love stories like this, they love to turn them, to use them for their own end. And he was advised, you know, be careful about telling a story like this because it'll give the far right more ammunition. But he said, I'm going to do it anyway. And other friends of his said, well, be very careful, mind your own safety. You're going down avenues, you're talking about people that have a lot to lose. It's extraordinary. Read it later on, read every bit of it. It'll take you some time, but it's greatly written, I think. Let's welcome to the programme Raja Mia, MBE. Raja, you're very welcome, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correct. If I'm not, tell me straight off the bat, please. Nice to meet you.
Pleasure, Richard. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Well, it's bombshell stuff, Raja. And I want to go, because we've got all the time that we will need, even if we go over the time, we've got plenty of time to talk about what happened. I might have done your own background a bit of injustice. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, because there might be one or two things relevant to what you're doing that maybe I omitted in my introduction. Go ahead.
No, I mean, for me, it's really simple, I think. Where we are in is I spent 30 years working for the government in various roles. It's no more complicated than that.
In various roles, and you were awarded an MBE for your services.
Absolutely. I was 29 years old. I was awarded an MBE. I'd worked for Tony Blair. I'd worked for Gordon Brown. I'd worked for David Cameron. And I like sharing this story. I worked for Theresa May when she was Home Secretary, and she sacked me because we had a disagreement on our policy in Libya. I objected to children being free to go over there and joining the killing of Gaddafi and coming back the week after. I said, these people aren't our friends. It was the Al-Nusra Front and people like that. And the government didn't seem to listen, and we went our separate ways. So that's where my relationship with the government ended. But up to that point, I'd, and advised multiple prime ministers and secretaries of state and all of those things. If I'm not credible, then, you know, you make your own mind up. But my past is definitely credible.
Yeah, that's why I asked you to say that, because your resume is extensive. You have briefed and advised multiple governments. By the way, the Foreign Affairs Select Committee proved you right, didn't they, when they reported on Libya? Of course, Crispin Blunt proved you right, said you were right.
Absolutely. And if we carry on, there's a critique going on at the moment of the prevent policy and all the rest of it. And I learnt my stuff on counterterrorism from actually spending time in Belfast. And the reality, Rich, is we don't change people. People change themselves. And we create the situations where that change can happen. And that's the role of government, really. So, you know, we're still playing that game, and it's a charade. But that's a conversation for another day, I think.
Well, I tell you what, mate, it is. I'll invite you back on in the very near future to talk about your work there, because it's very relevant to many of the things we talk about on this programme. So we've got all the time that we need. Thanks for giving us your time today.
It's a pleasure. And first of all, my apologies. I know you've not said this, but you tried to get me on before Christmas, and I just couldn't. I have an elderly mother who's recovering from cancer, and I'm her carer. So that's just why I missed you. And my apologies.
Not at all, man. I appreciate that. I don't expect people to drop everything and come on with me. I knew that I'd eventually get to chat with you, because I know you're very passionate about this issue. Before we start talking about the players, the councillors, the MPs, what led you to start looking into this, and how you came about the knowledge that you have shared on the blog, I was fascinated. And, you know, I'm a socialist, Raja, for my sins.
As am I.
As are you. And, you know, it was interesting reading that about the far right. It's very interesting getting your perspective on how white working class people, how they fare, how they do, how they live in Oldham. And you're not very complimentary, very early on in the series, Welcome to Oldham, about how the situation that, you know, let's say working class folks find themselves in Oldham. Do you want to talk about that just as a prelude to where we're going to go?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's very, very clear in Oldham is that it's multi-generational, Richard, where the white working class have been oppressed, and they've been repeatedly oppressed, and they've been shut down. And you talk about the far right, and this is what's happened, and it's intentional. It's completely intentional, because it just doesn't happen in Oldham. I've seen it in Labour-controlled towns and cities across the country. And bear in mind, I am still, up to now, a fully paid-up member of the Labour Party. I check every month, and they've not cancelled my direct debit yet, and they've not sent me any emails to kick me out yet. So that's where I start from. And what takes place here is that the reason I call them a professional class, I call them a cosmopolitan elite. And for them to exist, and these are in the towns where the council is the main employer, these wealthy people come in from out of town and service these poor communities, and they hold them in contempt. They do not understand any of these people. They're not from that place, and they hold them in complete contempt. And the minute they say anything, it's twisted. And it's twisted, and it's weaponized into racism. Each and every time, it's weaponized. And unfortunately, what you find with traditional white working class communities, and I don't mean this in any other way, but in a respectful manner, they've been conditioned to frame their grievances in a racialized manner, and it's a trap. And as soon as you frame it in that way, it's a reason for these people who hold power to step back and say, there you go, you're racist, we're not dealing with you.
I've heard, I know, obviously you've been a very clever man, you'll have done your research, so you will know that at one time I used to have an association with David Icke, who's from Leicester.
Yes.
And David doesn't have a racist bone in his body, whatever anybody thinks of his theories about the world and the universe and all of that, not a racist bone in his body. But he talked about Leicester and how white working class people in Leicester, he described it almost in exactly the same terms as you. And he said, again, kind of conditioned to frame their outpourings, to frame their opinions in a racist way. And he talked about it almost being deliberate, that white working class people were deliberately kind of almost programmed to think that the other ethnicity, the other ethnic background, was doing better and getting a better helping hand than them, even whether, even if that was the case or even if it wasn't. So whether it was true or whether it wasn't true, the white working class people were kind of being conditioned to think that the brown-skinned chap, the Sikh chap, a chap from whose family came from Pakistan, or the Indian chap, they were doing better and they were being favoured. And you touch on that, don't you, in the blog?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, that's very much the case, is it's that perception, but it's encouraged, it's facilitated. Encouraged is too light a word, it's facilitated. And it's facilitated by those in power because it suits them, because it allows them to carve people up in sections. And it's old-fashioned colonialism. And what you've got is, instead of different groups of black people being, you know, played off with each other, in this country, the white working class come into that mix. And if you look at it, Richie, if you look at how we talk about this, anyone who talks about this, they engage with this by talking about the white working class as a distinct racial group.
Yeah.
And that's been thrown into the mix. So as well as the Pakistanis, the Bangladeshis, the Indians and the Sikhs, we've thrown in the white working class. We don't talk about these other groups through a class dynamic.
No, we don't. You know, you've done it in the blog, in the seven parts of the Welcome to Oldham. There's much more on the website as well. We could do series of programmes on this. It's the sort of thing the BBC used to do a long time ago, and they don't do it anymore. But it's never been more important. Identity politics, of course.
It's filthy, Rich. Identity, it is identity politics. And it's a race to the bottom, and it's a you have, I haven't. And all the time, the people who are left fighting over the scraps have been exploited to be in that position.
And you believe that white working class people in Oldham, as you've observed, they've really taken the brunt of this in the time that you've been in Oldham.
They're at the bottom of this. And I'll tell you why they're at the bottom of this, because they have no political voice, Richie.
Yeah.
That's why. They have no group identity through which to mobilise it. Whether you like it or not, the reality on the ground is the immigrant communities, my community, the Bangladeshi community, the Pakistani communities, the Indian communities, still have historical structures through which their voices can be heard. The white working class communities historically would have been heard through the trade union movements and community organisations like that. Those things have gone, Richard, and those people have been left behind.
So you talk in the blog about, and it's a startling read for anybody, you know. I'm in Salford now, proud of it. I come from a little village called Ballybeg in Waterford, real working class place. My parents are working class people. So it really resonates with me, this. There'll be people listening to it and they'll be gripped by this. You say that the councillors on Oldham Council and even the MP, Jim McMahon, there's absolutely no need for them to consider or to waste any time whatsoever on the white vote. It doesn't matter to them. That the most important thing is the Asian vote. Do you want to explain that? How does that work? Why?
So let me give you a very, very simple example of this. You know this recent general election, yeah?
Yeah.
There were 25 constituencies that went Tory that had always been Labour and never went, yeah? They talked about this red wall and these 25
races
Tory. No one shared this research yet because no one had done it. I just looked at it and instinctively I thought, I bet it correlates, and it does. 20 of the 25 areas that went from Labour to Tory have less than 1% Muslim populations.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So 20 of the 25 that went from Labour to Tory had less than 1% Muslim population. The Muslim bloc vote, and I use that word intentionally, it's not Asian, it's Muslim, and it's mainly, you know, when I say Muslim, it's Pakistani and Bangladeshi. The Muslim bloc vote props up the Labour Party. And now, more than ever, the Labour Party is dependent on this Muslim bloc vote. Because in the places where the white working class have finally mobilised, they have been able to overthrow Labour, the traditional Labour MPs. But in the places where they've held on because the bloc Muslim vote, and sometimes in these places it's 20%, 25%, Richie, in terms of the vote, and these people come out and vote. You know, whether it's legitimately voting or illegitimately voting, the votes are cast.
Now, let's talk about illegitimately voting. But am I pronouncing your surname right, Raja? Is it Mia or Maya?
It's Mia.
Raja Mia. Things were so crazy today. I was reading the blog again. I read it, of course, before Christmas. I've been reading it and following it. And today I wanted to refresh my mind. I'm reading it. And I could have gotten a YouTube video of yours and gotten your surname. I was kicking myself before coming on air. But I'm delighted that you're on. Raja Mia, MBE, is live on the radio programme today. This might be the most important conversation you hear, folks, for a long time. It's hugely important. There's so much to this. We're going to be talking about grooming gangs in Oldham and how nothing has been done about it and why Raja believes that everything we are talking about right now is relevant to why it's not being investigated and why it might be being covered up in Oldham. This is bombshell stuff on foot of what we heard yesterday in Manchester. Right. Now, illegitimate voting. You deal with postal voting in the blog. You just mentioned that Pakistanis and Bangladeshis, they're brilliant. Let's give them all the credit in the world. These are good people. They come out and they vote in big numbers. And they encourage multi-generational thing. They talk about it to get people out to vote. But you think that there's a slightly unsavoury side to this, and it's around postal voting. Now, you've educated me, my friend, because I've not voted in a general election since 2002. And I've not voted in any local election in the UK since I've moved back to the UK from Spain. You might want to punch me for that, but that's the way I am. We'll talk about that another day. I didn't realise that you could use a postal vote in local elections. I'm pretty shocked by that. Tell us about postal voting and why you believe that it is being manipulated and why there might be some illegal aspect to it.
Postal voting is being manipulated by the cartels, and it's as simple as this. This is how it takes place. Asian families are encouraged to register for postal votes. This most recent election, the first flyer that went out by the parliamentary candidate at the time, the MP Jim McMahon, included a registration form for postal votes. My brother lives in his constituency as an Asian, and that's what came through in the post. It was a flyer saying, "I'm Jim McMahon, I'm your MP, and please find attached a form to register for postal votes." Now, these people know this is what takes place, and postal voting essentially, which is, if I register to be to postal vote, I am not necessarily filling in that form, and I am not necessarily witnessing that form.
Yeah.
Now, what takes place is in Asian families, in traditional Asian families, what would ordinarily happen is the man of the house would take control of that role. Okay. Now, if the man of the house takes control of that role, there is maybe his wife, his grown children, his in-laws. We're talking about extended families. It's not just one home. We're talking about 2, 3, 4, 5 houses who will come under his jurisdiction, and 15, 20 votes at a time. Now, we accept in this society, already we accept, it's not even up for debate. There's misogyny in the Asian communities, and women traditionally are not as free as we would want them to be in a liberal Western society. Whether it's through cultural reasons, whether it's through other reasons, it doesn't matter. That's the reality of the ground. What takes place is these votes are collated by one bloke, and sometimes he'll fill them in himself, and someone will collect them. Someone from the mosque, for instance, will collect them. Other times, they're left empty, and they will be what's known as harvested. It's a technical term that the Electoral Commission use. This government is trying to deal with some of this, I think, and they'll go, and these votes will be collated in a central place, in a restaurant maybe late at night, or even the mosque. There was an allegation in the national press that it was the local center, the Oldham Central Mosque, that was responsible for harvesting postal votes. And these postal votes would be submitted en masse in such a way where if you ask the Conservative Party about their candidates in Oldham, historically, prospective candidates have refused to stand in Oldham because they know that they can't fight the postal votes.
There might be Asian men and women listening to this now. They might be, they might be Asian Muslims. They might not be. They might be Asian Christians. They might think, Jesus, he's painting a very unflattering picture of Asians here. How sure can you be?
I'm not, Richard, because this is the thing. That I am fortunate. When I talk about myself, I say I'm fortunate because I'm able to speak out. That many people from the background I come from and the communities I come from are not able
to
speak.
They won't speak out. But how sure are you that that situation you described, that patriarchal figure, will collate all those votes in his extended family from people who might not even want to vote or who don't care, but he'll get them signed up anyway. How sure are you that that is a very common thing?
100% sure.
Because you know what? When you think polls...
I'll tell you what I did just before...
Yeah, go on, yeah.
Just to demonstrate it, I went round to a random group of friends' houses who had registered for postal votes. And I said, can I have your postal vote? They gave me their envelopes, no question asked. They gave me the envelopes because I am I have influence in certain areas, thinking they'd maybe they'd get a favour off me later or something. I took a photograph of all of them and then I took it back to them. I didn't open them or anything like that, Richie. I just wanted to demonstrate how easy it is.
That you could actually do it. Because I would have thought, you know, again, me being naive, and I should know better as a political journalist, postal votes to me always meant, I mean, I get an email sometimes, not always, from back home to say that if I want to vote in the Irish general election, I can do, because I live here. I assumed that you would use a postal vote in the event that you're not in town on polling day. And that's how it should be, shouldn't
it? That's how it used to be. Like, it used to be like the armed services. Yeah. And, you know, people who are overseas. The Labour Party changed it. It's one of the things they did during, I think, the second Tony Blair term. The Labour Party changed it and said anyone can have a postal vote. And, of course, in the communities, I mean, and the stats are misleading because they say, oh, it averages this. It's something like 10% or something across the country, and all of them is 10%, so it falls more or less in. But that's not the truth, because they won't release this on purpose, Richie, is then actually what demographics are registered, you know, what ethnic backgrounds, what religious backgrounds are registered more for postal votes. And I am certain you will find that the Muslim community is demographically overrepresented in postal vote registration.
Yeah, and I get messages from people all the time, and I've learned not to be judgmental about people, not to pigeonhole people and label people.
And these people don't have a choice, Richie. Yeah. They're victims, and we need to see them as victims. You know, the old woman whose postal votes is took off her, she has no choice in this.
No choice in the matter. She might not want to vote. She might want to. She might be thinking about voting for somebody else, but it's done. It's just...
It's took away from her. The choice of her, when I was young, I remember my aunties would go and vote, And they'd laugh, and they, you know, and they'd say to the husbands, "You don't know who I'm voting for." Once I get behind, you know, the ballot box, you know, the booth, and that's a fundamental right we have in our democracy, and it's just been through a technicality, it's been took away from us, and those who suffer from it the most are those who are the most oppressed.
Jim McMahon is the MP for Oldham, and it's funny. Michael Meacher comes up in the blog. I knew Michael very, very well. I used to interview Michael during my days on radio in Spain on a number of issues, US imperialism, British foreign policy. And I liked him, Michael. I had a bit of time for him. I didn't know him personally, and he wasn't my MP. Maybe
He was my MP.
He was your MP.
He was a dignified man. That's all I'd say about Michael. Every time I ever had an interaction with him, he was a dignified, respectful. He was a gentleman.
He was a
gentleman.
And he brought up Bilderberg and stuff at the Parliament, which again, you know, a lot of people wouldn't know about these secret societies. And I thought fair play to him, Michael Meacher. Now, Jim McMahon, 27,000 majority, entirely dependent on the Asian community in Oldham, and you say in your blog, and we're going to come to child grooming now in the next few minutes. We've all the time we need, of course, with Raja Mia MBE on Wednesday's Richie Allen radio programme. They don't care about the white vote. They care about nothing else, only the Asian vote.
But you can't get the white vote out, Richie. The far right have tried year after year after year. They've been disenfranchised so much, you can't get the white vote out from working class communities.
And you say they're so loyal, if they don't vote Labour, they just won't vote full stop.
They don't. And look, working class communities are loyal, you know. And if they don't, you know, and they if they're not going to vote for Labour, they won't vote. They won't turn out.
They couldn't hold their nose and go and vote for Tory. I've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
We're going to talk now about your contention that the current Labour regime, for want of a better word, the current Labour consortium in Oldham, that's Labour members on the council and Jim McMahon, you reckon they're controlling the town through controlling the Asian vote. This is why I mentioned reading Frank Sheeran's book earlier on. I wasn't doing that to be silly or to make a joke. Reading this book about, you know, how the mob and how the mafia, how they run things, and reading your, as I said, expertly written series, Welcome to Oldham, that's how it rings to me. They're controlling the town through controlling the Asian vote. Expand on that for me.
Okay, they're controlling... Let me just demonstrate. The neighbouring constituency, Oldham East and Saddleworth, okay?
Yeah.
The MP was Debbie Abrahams. Seven of the nine wards went to the Tories. Debbie Abrahams still got in because in the one ward where the Muslim vote turns out and turns out in huge numbers carried her through.
My God.
And, you know, that was Oldham East and Saddleworth.
So in proportional... Yeah, in proportional representation, in proportional representation, the Tory would have won, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, in terms of if it was done properly, in terms of... No, Debbie's numbers were higher.
Yeah,
of course.
Forced past the post.
But they almost excluded, you know, the largest chunk came from one place. And the place it came from, Richard, this is where it gets interesting. The place it came from, because she's an MP, is the area of Glodick. Now, Glodick is one of the poorest areas in the country. It used to be an Irish immigrant sort of community, then an African Caribbean community. So it's that traditional sort of, it took in the next wave and it took in the next wave. Now it's almost predominantly Pakistani community. The deputy leader of the council is a lady called Arud Shah. Now, Arud Shah was kicked out of Glodick by the Glodick members. An independent got in. But before she stood for election, she was involved in, with Jim McMahon, in the transfer of the local Glodick baths, the old swimming pool, to a local community organisation called the Ghazali Trust, 2 weeks before the election during the time of Purdah. And to anyone who looks at that, eyebrows will be raised as to why the council were involved in the sale of a community asset to an organisation with influence in the community, to an organisation who had a direct prejudicial interest with the deputy leader, and she declared that prejudicial interest 2 weeks before the election. Why couldn't they wait 1 week after the election?
So you allege, you've deduced from that. I'm not deducing it. I'm going to try and be as objective as I should be here. You deduced that was a gift. It was an inducement, basically.
And then we go back to, and if that was the only one, Richie, you could say maybe I've misinterpreted it, and I would accept that. But that's not the only one. We had to go and get a series of freedom of information requests out of the council. They lied. You can say they didn't tell the truth, or they provided me with inaccurate information. What we'd done beforehand, Rich, and I'll be honest, we set them up. We knew what the answer was, and we submitted a freedom of information request, hoping that they wouldn't tell the truth, so we could go back to them and say, actually, you've not been honest. And they fell into that. And what they fell into was that public land was sold to the Oldham Central Mosque at a discounted rate. The council, in their response to the Freedom of Information, said, actually, no, we sold it at market value. And then when we asked for the information to actually demonstrate how you valued it and where the documents are, they came back and said, oh, it was our error. We sold it at below market value. And then not only did they sell it below market value, Richard, they sold it below market value on interest-free terms for 20 years, or just under 20 years.
And you've detailed this in...
Yeah, it's all in there, Richard, and it gets worse. And this is the mosque that made the national newspaper for the harvesting of postal votes.
Yeah, that's right.
And the allegation. And the mosque's official response to a national newspaper, I think it was in the Telegraph, so it's not... And I'm not just, spouting this off. The mosque response was, we do not get involved in political matters. Within months of the election taking place, the local branch assistant secretary of the Labour Party, who also happened to be a trustee of the mosque, goes on Twitter and puts a photograph of himself, Jim McMahon, and the other trustees of the mosque, who also coincidentally include councillors and other members of the Labour Party. He's attending a party where he's thanking the mosque for all the votes.
Let me just remind our listeners what they heard there. They're not stupid, but I want to double down on this. This is documented in Raj's blog, recusant-9.com, the Welcome to Oldham series. There's 7 parts there, and it's extensive. It's going to take you a bit of time to read, but it's very easy to read. He's done a great job of it. And what he's just alleged there, to his credit, he's backed up with documentation on the blog itself. Inducements to the Asian community. Land sold to the Central Mosque in Oldham at a discounted rate with favourable interest terms over the next 20 years.
Zero interest terms.
It's all there, this. Now, what I can't understand is where in the name of God is Labour's National Executive Committee. So if we're going to come to child abuse in a minute. There's nothing nice about child abuse, but our listeners are desperate for us to talk about grooming because they know it's going on around the country. They want to hear, but we're going to come to that in a minute. Where is Labour's National Executive Committee? Is there any oversight nationally to what's going on? Go on.
I have been stonewalled. Now, bear in mind, I have links in the Labour Party.
Yes, of course, I was going to say that.
Ministers, I work for the various Home Secretaries, all of that. Absolutely stonewalled, Richard. To the point where I think it's Jenny Formby who you've got to write complaints to. I now understand, having first-hand gone through the Labour's complaints policy, of how frustrated all of those people must be who took complaints of anti-Semitism to them. Because you get given the runaround on purpose. They are not fit for purpose. Not at all.
I mean, this is the sort of thing that could destroy... I mean, Labour was annihilated in the election before Christmas.
And as a member, I say it serves them right.
Yeah.
Because and it's not because I'm a Tory, but because they have took advantage of our people. And when I say our people, it's working class people. They have exploited our people.
They allowed this notion, they allowed this claim go unchallenged, that us, you know, gammon white blokes like me, I'm a baldy white guy with a big red head on me, Raja, to be honest, and they put it about that guys like me, we voted to leave the European Union because I don't like guys like you, Raja, because I blame you for everything.
Never that.
Bollocks, absolute bollocks.
The majority of Asians I know voted to leave.
Yeah, absolutely. It had nothing to do with being a little Ireland or a little England, or nothing to do with that. I'm a socialist, I'm a trade unionist. I know that when you open the doors, and it's not about people from Africa or Asia, it's about people in Europe taking jobs that semi-skilled people need. They need them. And if they're competing in a community for those jobs, it's difficult enough anyway. But if all of a sudden you've got people coming in from parts of Eastern Europe because things are a bit better here, good luck, God love them, by the way, well, then things are difficult. And of course, it has an impact on social services or public services. But no, Labour allowed its heartlands to be painted as thuggish, loutish racist. And they paid for it, didn't they? Raja,
I mean, you remember, I forget her name, she's currently standing to be the Labour leader, who went on Newsnight or Question Time and started complaining about the waving of a
Thornbury's
flag.
Thornbury, was it? Was
there anybody Thornbury? Yeah, and it's their narrative. They love it because it in these places, they know if the white working class were to ever mobilise effectively behind a trade union or a socialist voice, which is where the natural disposition is anyway, they would absolutely transform these towns and communities. But it's not in their interests.
It's not in their interest to do it. Very quick summing up. Raja Mia is our guest. Raja Mia, MBE, it must be said. And he's got an amazing CV, Raja. He's advised several governments on issues to do with prevention of terrorism, extremism. He's worked in education. He's worked for Oldham Council. He's respected. I've been doing a bit of digging around him. A lot of things are being said about him by people on Oldham Council. And we will come to that a bit later on. But as far as I can tell, he's fairly widely respected. And as I said, he's got a very impressive CV. He's an expert in his field. And we've been talking about, well, the landscape, the political landscape in Oldham, which is mirrored. It's not just Oldham, it's mirrored around the north west and the north east. And he's talked about how the white working class vote is not important. White people, white working class people, poor people are discarded. They're not cared about. Nobody's interested in them. And he's talked about, well, basically how, particularly in Oldham, how Labour have managed in Oldham to court the Asian vote and to basically run Oldham, the council, they've got the MP as well, Jim McMahon, through basically pandering to the Asian vote. And we've talked about a couple of very serious things. Financial inducements to a mosque and also to an important group that was sold a bats, I think you said earlier on, Raja.
Yeah.
All of this is documented on the blog, by the way. And there's a huge row going on here. And it's going on as we speak because various members of the council and the MP himself, Jim McMahon, well, they've reacted very strongly on social media to the claims made by Raja in his blog. And we'll come to that a bit later on. I want to come to the grooming of children now, because this situation, this you know, for want of a better word, pandering to the Asian community in Oldham, maybe goes some way to explaining why you believe and you have seen evidence that in shisha bars in the area, the grooming of young girls is basically an open secret. It's happening. It has happened. It is happening. And that senior members of Oldham Council and the MP himself, Jim McMahon, are aware of it, as are the police in Oldham, you believe, but haven't as of yet anyway seemingly done anything to prevent it happening. Now, this is very serious. It's a very serious allegations you've made and others have made, not just you, about this grooming. You start wherever you want at the beginning. Bring in grooming. How does grooming in Oldham fit into everything we've been talking about? And how did you first learn that grooming of girls in Oldham, young girls, underage girls, is a real thing and is happening?
A couple of things, really, Richard, but to give you some... the beginning, I think, is important. I'll say this right to start with. This is so serious that the leader of the council and the MP and all the other powerful people have took to personally attack me, where it seems like I am the only one in the town to begin with who was speaking against them. I became the opposition in the town, and I just found that remarkable, because I'm not the opposition. I'm just a bloke. I'm a citizen. I've got a young daughter. I've got a family here. And my daughter, for whatever reason, and we've decided to come back here and to be closer to parents and grandparents and all those things. And I'm going to raise my daughter in this town. And if I'm going to raise my daughter in this town, I want my town to be a better place. Now, I have no other motive than that. I'm not interested in being a politician or anything like that. So I think it's important to make that clear at the beginning. The second thing I'll then say is, in terms of where this started, it started with an argument with my local mosque. It's the Oldham Central Mosque. My family helped raise money for that mosque. When I die, Richie, my funeral will be held at that mosque. No one who is arguing with me from that mosque will dispute those two facts. Okay? Now, what happened was an Asian mother got in touch with me, distraught, because she'd found out that the chairman of the mosque was a convicted sex offender. Wow. I wrote to the council's multi-agency safeguarding hub, to the designated safeguarding officer. I have an understanding of the procedures here, Richard, so I followed the procedures. They wouldn't write back. I chased them again. They wouldn't write back. And what then happened was someone from inside the council leaked me a dossier of evidence that showed that not this guy was a convicted sex offender. The council were aware of it, but had decided not to do anything.
Right, this is incredible, right?
I've got the dossier and I've released it. Now, from that,
yeah,
and I wouldn't back down, you know, because these are children. These are our children, and at this time, it was a Muslim. There were a group of Muslim children in that mosque, okay. And these are our children. I'd do it for any child, Richard, but these are our kids, okay. And then when people saw I wouldn't back down and what had happened, because this played out on social media, and I intentionally played out on social media. I thought, because the newspapers weren't interested, these things, you know, these local, they have relationships with with the civic setting, you know, with the town hall and stuff, and they weren't interested in picking up. So I thought, now I'll play it out. Now I won't create a fake profile or anything. I am who I am, and I'll play it out through me being me and give it credibility. And then what happened was an ex-councillor who I knew from working 15 or 20 years ago in a children's society project in the town, in a white working class neighbourhood. My history is my history. I worked 5 or 6 years in a white working class estate when I was younger. And a councillor, who's now a former councillor, got in touch with me. 25 years councillor, Richie. 37 years magistrate. You know, that man has credibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, Raja, I need to show you something. Will you come and have a cup of tea with me? I went to his house, modest little house, you know, just off the council estate, up in the area where he was a councillor. And he put something in front of me, which I couldn't believe it. And what it was a clear dossier of evidence that led to his sacking, by the way, by the then leader of the council, who's now the MP, Jim McMahon, which clearly reveals that the council were fully aware of Asian grooming gangs operating out of shisha bars, children being exploited, and they covered it up. And not only did they cover it up, and I released the copy of the email again this morning on purpose, and it's doing its rounds around Twitter as we speak.
The BBC email. This is
BBC email. I challenge anyone to read that and tell me that the funeral of Lee Rigby was not used to cover up news of grooming gangs from parents in the town.
Hold that thought now, because I'm going to ask you to explain that in more detail, because a lot of people listening now won't have read the blog. It must be said that a lot of people listening now will have read the blog, because it's been read over 1 million times, which is extraordinary.
And in fact, I used to post on Medium, and the leader of the council and his friends went onto social media to celebrate when Medium finally took off some of my blogs. So I went and created my own webpage.
You had to do it yourself. Yeah, I was going to mention that your stuff was taken down. So, a former magistrate, a former councillor, decades of service to Oldham, says to you, Raja, come over here, you got to see this. And he provides you with a dossier. And he says, I gave that dossier to Jim McMahon MP. He's the MP for Oldham now, Labour MP.
Yeah, at the time he was the leader of the council.
He was leader of the council at the time.
Yeah.
And they, not only did they not do anything with the information, but the gentleman whom you referred to, he was fired. Now, can you be certain, Raja? Can you be absolutely certain? Have you any proof that Jim McMahon did see that information, that he actually looked at that information and that
absolutely,
evidence?
Absolutely, because I have a series of communications that are released, and it's in Welcome to Oldham Part 4.
Yeah.
And you'll see the full series of email correspondence between Jim McMahon, the MP at the time, Michael Meacher, Chief Inspector Hayden Roberts, the social services people, and the BBC, all referencing shisha bars. I mean, these are places where rooms were rented out by the hour. Cameras had been set up. Come on.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
13-year-old children going there.
How do you know that Jim McMahon... Don't laugh, Raja. I've got to be fair to this guy. He's not here. The first thing I'm going to do tomorrow is email McMahon and the others mentioned in the blog to offer them right of reply. I wouldn't hold my breath. They'll speak to me particularly, but I will give them right of reply.
You're racist, mate, is what they'll do to you.
Well, they might do, and well, it won't be the first time I've been called a racist, so I won't lose any sleep.
No, shouldn't be.
So tell me this. Maybe McMahon looked at it, and maybe he said to somebody, have a look at that, and maybe somebody came back to McMahon and said, ah, there's not much there, Jim. Maybe. I mean, how can you be so sure that McMahon willfully decided that I'm not going to take it any further?
Have a read of that last...
I did read it. I'm just asking you for the benefit of those who haven't read it.
Yeah, and it's got stuff in there where the journalist, Kevin Fitzpatrick, BBC North West journalist, he's refusing to comment on it, by the way, at the moment. There's stuff in there like where his inverted quotes, where it says things like Jim McMahon has told him he had limited knowledge of what was going on, reference to Lee Rigby's funeral, reference to community relations.
Let's go through that step by step. Raja, just to remind you, not that I have to, you're obviously a clever guy, we've got all the time we need. I know you're used to doing interviews elsewhere, you might get 7 or 10 minutes. I'm not going to rush you. I want you to explain this email, because the email is bombshell. This is Kevin Fitzpatrick, I think the guy's name is. He's a BBC journalist. And Raja has published on his Welcome to Oldham series, he's published an email exchange between the BBC journalist and Jim McMahon. And I wish Jim McMahon was here, because I'd like to say to him personally, giving him, you know, the benefit of the doubt and being fair to him, it doesn't reflect too well on you, Jim. Explain what was in that email, as if somebody has never read it, because it's important.
Okay, so first of all, I'll start from the beginning, okay? So Chief Inspector Hayden Roberts, this is a police chief inspector.
Yeah.
5th of June, 2013, yeah? And he clearly states that grooming gang operations fits a certain profile, and the specifics include public-facing shishabars, usually open in ex-public houses. So all the pubs were closing down and people are buying them up for next to nothing, yeah?
Yeah.
Passing through numerous owners, so you didn't know who owned it in the end, yeah? And these shisha bars advertise on Facebook, and they target young people, especially young girls, and attempt to lure them in, promoting it as for hire for fresher-type functions. One of these venues was, or two of these venues, was round the corner from the Sixth Form College in the town, okay? Where, you know, where 15, 16-year-olds would, yeah, would go. The front door is locked, and access is given only to known faces. This isn't me. This is the chief inspector of the police saying this, okay? The local college was briefed. A concerned father and brother, Asian father, Asian brother, hearing of the daughter's attendance at this venue, had stormed the premises to remove the daughter because they knew what was going on in these places. And GMP had, so the police had received intelligence that an Asian heritage girl was being blackmailed into giving oral sex at one of these venues.
Jesus Christ.
Michael Meacher. Now, you and I spoke about Michael Meacher, and I said he was a dignified man, and you said you did have positive interactions with him, and you and I have never spoken to each other before.
No, never. Now. No, no.
Yeah? So yeah. Michael Meacher's office, Hayden Roberts wrote to Michael Meacher's office, and Michael Meacher's secretary's handwriting is on the top. Michael, looking at this, it has a lot of relevance in Oldham, and in it, he talks about these premises are not being open to the public. You know, this is a chief inspector writing to the MP. Yeah, children are invited and are being piled with drink and drugs and are then being exploited. That's Chief Inspector Hayden Roberts' letter to Michael Meacher MP. And it's on Oldham Council letterhead because at the time, Inspector Roberts was part of this multi-agency working group, which is common, you know, in terms of councils, where the councils and the police work on safeguarding together. That letter was dated the 13th of June, 2013. So all of these things happened, and they knew. They just knew.
Here's the obvious question. So Jim McMahon was leader of the council at the time.
Yes.
The obvious question is then, hadn't McMahon done as much as he could then? If the chief inspector... If a senior police officer, Hayden Roberts, is writing to Michael Meacher, Jim McMahon might say to you, if he was here today, he might say, Raja, what the hell do you want me to do? I'm a politician. I'm not a lawman.
He was the council leader, and the council have a statutory duty to safeguard our children. Now, you saw the stuff yesterday with Maggie Oliver, how the police were targeted. You know, the police didn't do enough, and the council pretty much got off lightly. It's actually... The community facing element of this is the council. Now, you might say, okay, what more do you want me to do? What more do you want me to do? And I'll just blow that argument away with this. Huey MacDonald, who's a councillor, and this is in the open, he's come out as a whistleblower, he's been on there at ITV News and he's given testimony and all of those sorts of things. Huey sent an email to an organisation, to his colleague, who was also a magistrate and a 30-year time said councillor, who was the chairman of an organisation called Positive Steps. Positive Steps is the old career sort of service, but they expanded. So it works with all the vulnerable children and all of those sorts of things. And he raised his concerns. He said, have you seen this? When Jim McMahon found out that Huey MacDonald had shared this, and Huey will share this with you, Huey MacDonald was suspended. And then they manoeuvred to basically remove him from being a councillor.
And you know that McMahon, can you prove that McMahon ordered the suspension of Huey?
Yeah, Huey's got all the paperwork. He's done all of that. You know, that's not something I've gone into, but absolutely. It was done by Jim
McMahon. You see, I when you say that, I don't like that. I don't mean I don't like you saying it. I don't like that on behalf of Jim McMahon. I don't like that. I've read this in the blog. I don't like it. It doesn't look good. I'd like to make the argument for McMahon. I'd like to, you know, in his absence, I'd like to make the argument, listen, the police had the information. I'm just the politician on the council, the leader. So yes, I do have a responsibility for safeguarding, but the police have the information. I'd like to make that argument on behalf of McMahon.
But he didn't do that.
Yeah, but then you've got... Then I have a huge problem. And I'm going to ask him these questions when I email him. I've got a huge problem with him then. Some of the other things that we've talked about, the mosque and everything else, and then the firing or the suspension of this guy, I don't like it at all. And then, to be fair, his reaction on social media to the blog and to you, I have a problem with as well. He's a public servant. He's not supposed to be attacking...
We have the right to ask questions.
The right to ask questions, exactly. Right. Yeah, and if he feels that he's been libeled by you, he's got recourse. He can go to a solicitor.
Absolutely has recourse.
If he wants to, yeah.
Now, I'll just interrupt you, Richard.
Yes, go ahead. No, go ahead.
There's an email here, and I've got it. It's on the blog, part three. You'll see it. Councillor Hughie MacDonald at the top, and it's from Councillor Jay McMahon. So that's from Jim McMahon. And it's, we are writing to refer a complaint to the Standards Committee for a formal investigation. The complaint is that Councillor Hughie MacDonald leaked a confidential email to a member of the public who subsequently sent the information to a reporter at BBC GMR. And what did Hughie leak to the member of the public? It wasn't a member of the public. It was the chairman of the council's own partner organisation, Positive Steps. And that partner organisation works with vulnerable children. Do you not think that partner organisation that works with vulnerable children had a right to know that vulnerable children in our town were at risk?
They needed to see that. Of course they did. They had a right to see it. He did the right thing by leaking the email to Positive Steps. He did the right thing. And then that got in the hands of this guy Fitzpatrick at the BBC.
Yeah.
And he then contacted Jim McMahon. Now, or this might be getting a bit confused. Jim McMahon is the MP for Oldham. He used to lead Oldham Council, and he was there when all of this was going on. And Raja Mia MBE, his contention is that McMahon was complicit. Not that he was involved. He certainly wasn't involved in abusing children.
No, I know you've never said that, but you get some crazy...
I've seen one or two crazy tweets today. Jim McMahon has not been involved in the crimes against children or anything like that. The allegation that Raja is making is that basically, and this has echoes of Islington in the 70s and early 80s, and Margaret Hodge. You're basically saying that he just did sod all about it, but, you know, he by doing nothing about it, he also, you know, kind of helped it kind of go away or tried to make it go away.
I go further, and this is based upon my experiences of living in this town. The reason why he helped kill it is because once the Labour Party control the Asian vote, they have to keep control of the Asian vote.
It would destroy Labour, you reckon, if Asian men and women knew what you have been alleging in the blog. If they knew this to be true, you reckon that he'd be done for in Oldham, and so would...
Well, some of his own councillors would turn... Some of his own councillors who... You know, and if you look at Rochdale, the grooming gangs in Rochdale, and the evidence has come out, the Asian councillors, a number of Asian councillors gave some of those groomers references. Yeah? These guys were known to him. And sorry, Richard, the other thing that was known to the council at the time, and this is 2013, bear in mind, so the Rochdale grooming gang had just happened and the stories had just broken the Times and stuff, and the ringleader's face was all there. It was a guy called Shabir Ahmed. You've all seen him. He went by the nickname of Daddy. He was, and you know, they've not sued me, and they can't, you know, and you can't, as I keep being reminded by people, you can't be sued for telling the truth. Shabir Ahmed worked for Oldham Council.
When he was working for Oldham Council, this guy was abusing children in Rochdale.
Shabir Ahmed worked for Oldham Council with vulnerable children and families.
He had a job with the council.
He had a job with Oldham Council with vulnerable children and families. And that information was leaked to me from trusted sources within Oldham Council.
But we can't be sure that anybody in Oldham Council would have known that this guy was a child rapist. Can we? No.
But do you not, and I accept that, but do you not think that once it came out that he had a role working with vulnerable children and families and working in
Oldham Council,
that the parents of the town should have been told that this guy worked for us Have you come into contact? You know, should that not have happened?
Yeah.
Because we know children don't come forward. We know children who are raped and abused when they're young don't come forward.
Let's talk about Kevin Fitzpatrick and this email exchange, which I don't like. Again, I don't like it. And I tried to be fair here. You know, I do. I genuinely do. None, we're all appalled by grooming. We're sickened by it. It doesn't matter who does it. It doesn't matter what colour or creed you are. It's disgusting. It makes us all want to vomit. It's horrendous. But I try to be as fair as I possibly can. And I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I don't know Jim McMahon. And he's got a right to defend himself, and he's got a right to his opinion as well. And I'd like to, he definitely won't talk to me, but I hope he'll go on the record at some stage.
Comment. He refuses to comment on this.
He refuses. But if the BBC does its job, he'll have no choice. So Kevin Fitzpatrick, BBC journalist, you saw an email from Fitzpatrick to Jim McMahon where Fitzpatrick says that I won't be pursuing child sex abuse in Oldham anymore. What the hell was that about?
So what had happened was the BBC Radio did a Radio 5 Live had done something on the Sea Shepherds, and they'd gone to Blackburn, they'd gone to Oldham, they'd gone to Manchester. They even had a Manchester councillor openly talking about the concerns of rooms being rented by the hour, and they were concerned of child sex exploitation. And it was an Asian councillor from Russia on the, you know, so this isn't a race thing. You know, the good people, regardless, are coming forward and saying we must do something, yeah? Now, what this was the BBC were trying to get some data. They were trying to get some data, and they were going to run with a story that said, because they'd done their own investigation in the town, and their own investigation in the town where they'd spoken to Asian contacts, Richard, they said, yes, this is going on, this is going on, go and do something. And he said, look, this is his line, this is Fitzpatrick's line, despite contacts in the Asian community confirming to me that there was concern about young people going into these clubs. At the request of GMP and the council, we agreed not to broadcast anything after you told us that knowledge about the activities at these clubs was very limited. And you were concerned, ready for this? You were concerned about tensions in the town ahead of Lee Rigby's funeral.
Yeah, I can't, see, I really don't like that. That's what really cheesed me off when I read that email. Because that email suggests very strongly that Jim McMahon, the MP, he wasn't the MP then, that Jim basically told the BBC guy, nothing to see here, really, you know, when Jim was fully aware that...
Well, you've seen the emails before on. How can you have limited knowledge when emails from Chief Inspector Hayden, from your own safeguarding team...
Not nice, is it?
...copied into that you've then sacked a councillor over... has gone all the way up to the MP and stuff, and you're saying your knowledge is limited?
And don't call me stupid now. I'm saying this because I have to be a bit fair. Jim McMahon might have an explanation for this. He might have some explanation, but he has to give it, whether it's to you.
And he has to give an explanation.
He has to explain this because...
He hasn't. And what he's now saying completely, it's there in black and white. Tensions in the town ahead of Lee Rigby's funeral. We go back to where we started, Richard. This is saying, oh, look, those white working class folk, the scum, they will come up in arms, they'll start doing this, they'll start doing that. No, they won't. They care about the children the same as everyone else, and they'll react and respond in a dignified manner as much as anyone else, providing the authorities who are tasked with the responsibility of safeguarding our children do the job that they're tasked with.
Yeah, you mentioned there Fusilier Lee Rigby, who was murdered by two men whose names I remember, but I can't pronounce very well, so I'm not going to try and pronounce their names, but they're in prison for the rest of their lives. And he was insinuating or intimating to the BBC journalist, obviously, Jim McMahon was, that tensions are very high, you know, white people pissed off over Lee Rigby, and, you know, we want to keep things nice and calm here. None of the emails, and they're all legitimate, obviously, that you've published, they don't cast Jim McMahon in a very favourable light, but I shouldn't and don't want to editorialise because he deserves the right to reply to this. The allegation.
We have been asking him for months. He's the town's MP, and we've been asking him for months.
Now, you, Raja, despite your career and your resume and everything else, you've got every right to ask those questions. I would have more of an issue. I don't have. Jesus, I do have an issue with him not responding to you, except in the way that he has responded, which is. Again, doesn't cast him in a very good light. you know, the kind of aggressive trolling type stuff, not necessarily just from him, but from others as well, not good. What you really need here, because this is a national scandal, what you're describing is not just grooming. You've alleged in your blog, and you've provided some evidence to make my head spin, to be honest with you, is that criminality amongst Asian gangs, criminal gangs, not necessarily paedophile gangs, but including grooming gangs, is running riot in Oldham because of the relationship between the Asian community in Oldham and the Labour Party. That's why
the
I mentioned...
The power hood old.
The power...
Let me just...
The power. Go ahead, go ahead. Well, shut up. Go ahead.
Very simply demonstrate how that is true. Last Wednesday's full Oldham Council meeting, the stuff is on the internet. You can watch it. We can watch the live thing unless they take it down. The deputy leader of the council, who I've exposed for a whole host of things, including her direct links to criminality, accused me of being a misogynist. I don't care. I'm no more a misogynist than you are a racist. You know, these things are what they are, and people need to raise them, and we shouldn't be scared of these labels being thrown at us. She got up and defended her right. She championed her relationship with a convicted heroin dealer who was put in prison for being the getaway driver for Dale Cregan. Dale Cregan murdered two police officers. One of them was a young woman from our town. Do you know what the council, every councillor did after she stood up and defended her relationship with him and how she, you know, how she had to stay loyal to him and all of that nonsense?
They applauded, right?
Stood up and applauded.
Let me, I'm going to play a little bit of this. This is not right of reply, but I want to play a little bit of it. You're now talking about a woman who's, I suppose, pretty close to Jim McMahon.
She works for him. She's the deputy leader of Oldham Council. She is the parliamentary assistant to the MP.
She's the parliamentary assistant to Jim McMahon MP. Her name is Aruj Shah. She's a councillor, deputy leader of Oldham Council. And she's mentioned in your blog, you're not happy because of who she consorts with. And I suppose I can understand that to a degree, but she defends that. I'm going to play two audio clips, Raja. If you'll just bear with me, you'll be able to hear them loud and clear. Just before I play them, I want to remind you, Raja Mia, MBE, has briefed several recent governments, multiple governments and secretaries of state on a number of issues, and has worked in education, school trusts, very well known in the Northwest. I came about knowing about Raja through a phone call on the Richie Allen phone-in show sometime back in October, I think. He's written a blog. It's called recusant-9.com. Nine as in N-I-N-E, recusant-9.com. Welcome to Oldham. I'm not joking when I say this is Nicholas Pileggi, this is Frank Sheeran, this is Mario Puzo. That's not to impugn what Raja has written. But he paints a picture of Oldham, unlike anything I've ever read in any mafia book, that is controlled by criminal gangs in Asia, controlling Labour Council, running riot. And because of that, the grooming of children has gone on in plain sight and is going on in that city. Raja has told everybody that will listen. He's contacted the National Executive Committee of the Labour Party. He's told the police, and he can't get anywhere with it. And yet there is a trail of documents published on the blog, in the blog, that support large parts. I'm not saying that he's telling lies or that he's, you know, exaggerating or that he's making it up. But a lot of what he says, he's got documentary evidence to say here it is. And where he doesn't, he says, I strongly suspect this happened because... But there's a lot of evidence. Now, back to this woman, Aruj Shah, who stood up in Oldham Council chambers last week and attacked Raja without naming him. And she did so because he's mentioned her numerous times in the blog because of her relationship with a guy called Muhammad Imran Ali. And Raja reckons that she used her lofty position as deputy leader of Oldham Council to help this guy get early release from prison. This guy was involved in the murder of Dale Cregan. right? That's a very famous case. He was the getaway driver. And he's made other claims about Arusha. She stood up in council the other day and spoke about him. Right, here's a couple of clips. It's only about 90 seconds. Have a listen.
He soon moves on, though never too far to him accusing me of the covering up of child sexual exploitation. Madam Mayor, who in this chamber would ever do that? What kind of person does it take to do that? And the very fact that this person can think it is more a reflection of him than it is me or anyone in this chamber. Yeah. He then goes on to accuse me of misusing my position in public office. And you know what, Madam Mayor? People say to me all the time, well, if that's not true, why do you not answer it? Well, if that's not true, why do you not answer it? Why do your colleagues... Why isn't Sean answering the fact that he's not a paedophile protector? Why isn't Jim McMahon not answering them questions? Madam Mayor, because we are too aware that if you were to even counter every single accusation he makes, you know that something more ridiculous and outrageous will follow. Madam Mayor, because he and these people, they're not about truth, but they're about intimidation. And that's what he tried to do.
We don't respond, she says, to Raja, because if you do, he'll come up with another ridiculous accusation after that. Now, finally, she goes on to talk about her relationship with the getaway driver at the murder of Dale Cregan. And then she also mentions her brother here.
Against you is not about the truth. He then went on to share pictures of me with my brother and one of my friends called Muhammad Imran Ali, who I've known since I'm 11 years old. Both of them have been into prison. And he did that because he wanted to then create a perception that I am part of, and he says this in his post, that I'm part of a criminal gang, that I am part of a cartel. Madam Mayor, he knows full well that I have not covered up child sexual exploitation, that I have never misused my public my position in public office, because he's asked these questions. He's asked these questions and he's had the answers. He knows I'm not part of a cartel. But he also, Madam Mayor, is fully aware that I would never condone any acts, not that my brother did and not that my friend did. But Madam Mayor, whilst my long-standing friendships and relationships will be difficult for some people to accept, and I fully understand that, I can't pretend that they don't exist. And I certainly cannot turn my back on people that I've known since childhood or, you know, for my political convenience.
They've done terrible things, Raja, but they're my friends and family. What do you want me to do, she says. She's got a point, maybe.
Of course she's got a point. Your friends are your friends, but you can't have those sort of friends and have a role in public life in the way she does. And I'll give you a very, very... clear example. I mean, she's selective in what she says, and you'll see my blog. The allegation she makes about me, I have no substance whatsoever. But let's look at the pictures I've shared. Her brother, she says, I shared a picture of her brother. I did share a picture of her brother. It's an election night. I have no issue with her brother. He was convicted when I think he was 18 or 19 years old for money laundering. I have no issue with that. People make mistakes. My understanding is he's not done anything else since and has come out. The photograph in the middle, and she posted this photograph herself on the night of her election victory, which is, so let's put this in context, yeah? It's not a family wedding or something, you know? And there's a Labour Party rose out and her brother, but there's a guy in the middle. The guy in the middle is called Zia Hussain. Zia Hussain was convicted for kidnapping, torture, sexually abused his victims, made them perform sex acts on each other, used a broomstick, and I'm sure your imagination can do the rest.
Yeah.
Filmed it, and when the police turned up, they found blood splattered all over the walls.
Yeah, that's right. This guy did unspeakable things. What the hell is she doing standing in a photograph with him? Could it have been
on the night of her election night victory with the Labour Rosette?
But she might say, listen, what can I do?
Just hold on. If that was Tommy Robinson or some far-right guy, how would that play out?
It wouldn't go down well, I agree with you. But she might say, listen, I'm at a victory party. I don't know who the bloody hell is rocking up to take their photograph of me. What am I going to do?
No, she's a childhood friend and she said as much. But then the next one is with Imran Ali. And Muhammad Imran Ali is locally known as Irish Imi. He is a prolific gangster.
Yeah.
There's no other way of describing him. He's a heroin dealer. He was thrown back in prison, I think, last year or the year before for heroin dealing whilst he was out on parole after his role in helping Dale Cregan. Arusha, in her role, and let me be clear, Richard, this is not personal. I would say this to anyone who held that role. Arusha, in her role as deputy leader of the council, has access to confidential multi-partnership documents, including things like where surveillance is taking place and all the rest of it. How can she have access to all of those sorts of things and maintain a relationship with these drug dealers?
But that's unfair now, Raja. I think that's unfair because she knew the guy when she was young. And
no,
the
relationship still... No, she didn't. That's the other thing, because within hours, the MEN ran the story. And within hours, someone had put up on the comments, and I've traced it back. She claimed she knew him when she was 11 years old. She didn't.
How do you know that?
Because we all grew up in the same places. And we've gone out and asked the question. She didn't know him when she was 11 years old.
Yeah, but it's all... You go out and ask people, oh, no, she didn't. That's hearsay. She says I knew him. And look, I'm trying to be fair to these people. I felt a bit for her when she said... She rang sincere to me. By the way, mate, I believe you're right that the grooming of children is going on in Oldham. You've done enough to prove that. You've also done enough to prove, as far as I'm concerned, that the local authorities there haven't dealt with it. And you've thrown some serious questions at them as to whether they deliberately didn't do anything about it or whether they were incompetent. I can't believe anymore. I'm like Maggie Oliver. I can't believe that they're incompetent. So I'm going to go with you there. I think you've done extraordinary work. But I felt a bit sorry for her today when I watched that. And she said, you know, the idea that I'm complicit in covering up grooming gangs, I'm bloody well not, she says. And she feels that she's been tainted.
At no point have I said Arood Shah is complicit in covering
up grooming gangs. Yeah, you've never connected her to it.
No, and she won't be able to prove it. And what happened afterwards, I mean, you don't play the clip, is you have a monologue of council after councillor saying, oh, I've been called a paedophile, how dare it?
Right.
Called any of these, you know, they've shifted the narrative, and I think they've done it on purpose.
Well, you haven't in the blog. I mean, that's why I said the blog is very well written. It's almost.
I've not done it.
You haven't. Let me
just give you this quote, okay? And it's from what she just said. He also indicated in other posts that he has an inbox full of stories about my personal life, and has made threats to publish these.
Did you?
Can I read what I've written? And is there in black and white?
Go on.
Arood Shah's link with Dale Cregan. Yes, you have heard that right. Now, first of all, let me make something very clear. I have absolutely no interest in Arood Shah's private life. I have an inbox full of stories about her personal life. I'm not interested in any of them. I myself am fully aware of the abuse that someone from the aging community faces when they choose not to follow a traditional lifestyle.
Fair enough.
That's what I said.
Yeah, you did. It's in the blog. You did. So to be fair, you haven't threatened to embarrass the woman with any posts that have been sent to you.
This is just a diversionary tactic. It's very simple. She works for the MP. Now, allegations have been made on the Manchester Evening News comments page. I lifted it before the MEN got rid of it. I'd heard them before and I submitted an FOI. I don't know, but then there's enough FOI submitted. Did Jim McMahon in his parliamentary office support the parole of this guy? It's a simple yes or a no. It's not an allegation from me because I find it hard.
You just want to know. Just want to know. You want to know, did she use her influence with Jim to help this guy get out early? I'm going to do about a 40-second summing up. I don't even know how I'm going to sum this up because I've never read anything like this in all my life. We've got Raja Mia MBE on the programme. Recusant-9.com. He's alleged that Oldham Council and the MP, the whole Labour organisation, is basically one massive cartel. It's a criminal cartel beholden to criminal elements in the Asian community in Oldham. And he supported that allegation with a lot of evidence that suggests that Labour councillors, former council leaders, current MPs, knew that children were being groomed and are being groomed in Oldham, but because of the implications for their own careers and for the Labour Party, they've basically turned a blind eye to it. And in the current climate, with everything that happened in Rochdale and Rotherham, this is absolutely incredible. It's bombshell stuff here. It really is. And I'd love to hear from Jim McMahon. And I do believe, I'm convinced of it, that Jim McMahon will have no choice but to speak to BBC Greater Manchester Radio or speak to the BBC National Channels. He will have to speak. He's an MP. He will have to speak to them. And he should do. He should feel compelled. He shouldn't be able to sleep I'd be so desperate if I was Jim McMahon to get to a camera to tell my side of the story. And the other people named in this as well. I'm making no judgment here. What I have said, and I stand over it, is some of the things that Raja has published, they make me very uncomfortable as a journalist. Because they do tend to, you know, to make you kind of lean towards, well, they did know and they turned a blind eye. That's why I mentioned Islington earlier on and Margaret Hodge and that scandal back in the 80s there. I've only said this once before to a guest in all the years I've been doing radio, and I don't do it for shock value. I do not. I've never been one of those presenters. Your life's in danger, mate.
Yeah, I've had death threats. Death threats from cartel members online. The police are protecting me at the moment. The other guy, ex-councillor Kaiser Rahman, is at the pig's head thrown through his window because he spoke out against the grooming. He's the only guy from within the ex-Labour Party who's actually come out and spoken about what's going on. And it is in danger, and it's fine because it is what it is. There's good people in this town, and there's good people in this town who deserve a better town. It's no more complicated than that. And you know, we talk about these as allegations, but let me just give you something that I think is important. In 2003, the Audit Commission came into Oldham. So this isn't me. This is the Audit Commission.
Yeah, I read this. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Audit Commission referred to Oldham Council as ungovernable. That, for anyone who's worked in government and with the Audit Commission, they will know that's code for corrupt.
Ungovernable. Now, Jim McMahon entered Oldham Council that year in 2003.
Yeah.
So he entered a shitstorm, basically.
Yeah,
when he came in, right? Yeah. Again, if he was here, he might say, listen, you know, this is local politics.
How is it better, Richard? Yeah. You know, and if you keep looking at this, what we've got is a complete breakdown in trust between the people of the town and the politicians and the public officials who run it. Come to this town and you'll see there's a complete breakdown in trust. You know, there's a whole host of people online, offline, and the streets. This is the only conversation. And this could have been dealt with very easily, but it wasn't, because the leader of the council, Jim McMahon's protege, Sean Fielding, behaved like an adolescent. You know, he was forced to announce an internal investigation. And when he was forced to announce the internal investigation, he went to social media and described a sex fantasy whilst his girlfriend put up a picture of his ripped boxer shorts. That was the week he announced the inquiry.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's just unheard of. And he says it was a joke. Like, no, mate, it wasn't a joke. Which young woman is going to come forward when the leader of the council is getting his girlfriend to put up his ripped underwear, and he talks about how he'd want his girlfriend to rip it with her teeth.
Tell me this, Raja. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left today. We've covered pretty much most of what's in the blog. Again, I can't say enough. People, you have to read this. You know, you need to read it and you need to share it with people. You really do. Get it out there. You know, it's been widely read anyway. More than 1 million people have read it. They've tried to stop it. Raja mentioned earlier on, it was originally on Medium. They deleted it and tried to prevent it getting out there. But it's out there. And it's good that it's out there.
I put a petition up. And the petition was calling for the Children's Commissioner, who has, you know, she's independent of government, but and she can hold government to account, wanting an independent investigation into grooming, not just in Oldham or Rochdale, but across the country. We need to take it out of the hands of politicians, and we need to put it in the hands of someone who really cares about these kids and is tasked with the responsibility of these kids. It got took down, and it got took down because of complaints. And the leader of the council, Sean Fielding, took to social media to gloat that a petition calling for nothing more than calling for an independent investigation into grooming had been took down.
What I can't understand about these people, if you are absolutely right, if you are, and I know you believe you are and you've put the evidence online, we look at Fielding and we look at McMahon and those and we think, right, you've not laid a hand on a child. But you must know that if it is going on and you're not doing anything about it, you must know that your day of reckoning will come. It came for Margaret Hodge in Islington and others. Jesus Christ, you know, grow a brain for a minute. Right, you might lose your cushy council job for a time, you might lose your political position for a time, but if you don't deal with it and you turn a blind eye to it, it's going to come by and back and bite you on the arse in years to come, and you're going to be condemned forever for not dealing with it. I can't get my head around that, Raja. Why don't they deal with it?
And this is the thing, what you've got to understand, this is not about an absence of resources, like Andy Burnham announced yesterday in terms of the results yesterday. It isn't about community relations. It isn't about the fear of being called racist. All of these are side issues. It is about maintaining power. And for the Labour Party to maintain power in times like in towns like Oldham, it needs to keep control of the Asian vote.
Can I ask you this before we part company today? And I know we'll do a follow-up on this when there is news in the near future. Is there an issue with some younger Pakistani men? Is there a problem around white girls who might be... I mean, I'm a council estate boy and proud of it. You know, and I grew up among girls and boys. We were rough and ready. You know, the girls, we used to get cider in the plastic bottles and we would drink it. And some of the girls smoked and we were a bit rough. You know, we all turned out okay, but that's how we were. Is there a problem with some young Asian men or Pakistani men where they see those girls as dirty and basically kind of subhuman, that they can do whatever they want? Is that a myth or is there some truth to that?
No, you see, and this will probably, you know, cause me issues, but I've not lied yet and I'm not going to start lying now. There's truth to it, Richie. There's truth to it. They're seen as dirty and they're seen as less, and of less morals and all the rest. And this is a cultural phenomenon because in towns like Oldham, these young men have very limited positive interactions with people who are different, and particularly young women who are different. And I'll give you a terrorist analogy or a counter-terrorism analogy. In the journey to radicalizing someone, you move them away, you remove them from the people that they're going to attack. So the narrative that you're told is the only narrative you believe.
Right.
And it's exactly the same. These guys have very limited positive interactions. And unfortunately, and it's not a criticism, it's the flip side, is that some of these young women do not get the attention that perhaps they'd want in the communities and in the environment and the family settings they come from. And this can be used and manipulated.
Yeah. I was reluctant to ask the question because...
You shouldn't be. You should never. And this is why. This is my biggest frustration. Yeah. We should be talking about this. The MP of our town, forget I don't like him, he should be showing leadership. He should be out there talking to people. The other MP should be talking to people. The leader of the council should not be going on social media and conversing with criminals and putting his underpants up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mess here, Rich, and it's a mess because it's all down to the vote and the fear that they'll lose control.
The reason I said I was reluctant to ask the question, and reluctant though I was, I would always ask it, is because, you know, you don't sound like a virtue signaler, far from it. You couldn't be accused of it. And neither am I, but I, you know, having lived so many years in Manchester, I've had friendships and do have friendships with various people from different backgrounds. A good mate of mine I'm still in touch with in Rochdale from a Pakistani background. And I just feel a bit rotten when I say stuff like that, you know, because, again, maybe I've been conditioned and programmed, you know, my politics been on the left in the past, you know, to be concerned about people from minority backgrounds. And maybe that's part of the programming as well. But if it is a thing, you know, it needs to be addressed. And, of course, senior men and women in those communities need to get a grip of it. You know, as much as Oldham Council, folks need to get a grip of it. The leaders in the mosque need to get a grip of it. You know,
culturally seen the other as an underclass.
Yeah.
You know? And, of course, you know, the police did the same, you know, and the councils did the same, you know. You know, so, and this goes back to where we started, how the white working class is seen as an underclass.
Very good friend of mine, Jean-Anne Crowley. I mention Jean-Anne often, famous actress, a great woman in Ireland, great help to me on this programme. says, very interesting listening to Raja. She compares what you're saying to the north of Ireland back in the day, you know, the ghettoisation.
Yeah.
And she makes a great comparison there. She's absolutely right to say that. I want to wrap it up for today. The reason that we could go on, and there are other things we could get into, but this repeats on a two-hour cycle at the top of the hour, and there's going to be a lot of people listening into this throughout the night. It goes out all over the world on various platforms in different countries, various websites, other stations pick it up as well, and I want them to hear it. So I'll give you the final word. I wish you the best with it. I believe you're sincere. I don't believe that you're out to destroy anybody's careers or to defame anybody. I really do believe that. It shines out of you. It shines out of the writing. What I want to see is, I want to see Jim McMahon take a bit of responsibility and answer the questions posed by you in a public forum. And he should do that on national television as an MP for Old. And he should say, look, things have been said. Here are the answers. It's got to be done. You know, and that's where I would leave it. And I would offer any of them right of reply, of course, and they would be treated just as respectfully as I've treated you. Raja, I'm going to mention the website, and then I'm going to shut up and give you the last 60 seconds to sum up if you want. The website is recusant-nine.com. That's recusant-nine.com. And if you want to follow Raja on Twitter, his Twitter account is at recusant-raja, R-A-J-A, at recusant-raja. Follow him there and read the blog. You will never read anything like it of its type again as long as you live. Thanks for coming on today. I admire your courage. I wish you the best, and I'll give you the final word, Raja.
No, absolutely. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I mean, I've wanted to come on for a while. All I'll say is, read it. Make your own mind up. The problem we have, the society we live in, is we you know, politicians think we're stupid, and the mainstream media think we can be easily manipulated. I'm not asking you to do any of those things. Read it and make your own mind up. And once you've got to that place, the only way it'll get better is by all of us working together to make it better. It's no more complicated than that. Thanks.
Thank you, Raja. I really appreciate it, mate. I'll be in touch with you in the coming days. I'm going to rush to get this online now. We are live, of course. And I'll get it on YouTube later on. And when I do, my friend, I'll send you the links on Twitter.
Thank you. And I'll share. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome, Raja. Raja Mia, MBE, speaking exclusively on the Richie Allen radio show today about a situation in Oldham that he has described in his blog to be absolutely extraordinary. Thanks to him for coming on. Thanks to you for listening. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning, 9:30. With the nonsense that is the YouTube newspaper review. I will see you there. Until then, you look after yourselves and one another. Going out with some Steve Earle. Bye now.